Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSilicast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, April 19th, 2009, and this is show number 200! Woohoo! I am so excited about the show, mostly because I have no idea what a great majority of the show is going to be about. Actually, there's a lot of great content that I've worked on, but interspersed throughout the show, we're going to have audio segments that you have sent in to Steve. As you know, he's been cloistered off in his den working with many of you, and he's doing this to mark this historic event in NoSilicast history. You know, 200 shows. I'm amazed to think we've spent this much time together, and you chose to do this. It's been so much fun to get to know each of you who've written in, sent in recordings, and especially the diehard fans in the chat room over on ustream.tv/NoSilicast. That's 5 p.m. GMT minus 8, also known as Pacific Time on Sunday nights. Well, let's kick in and hear our first audio segments from you.
Hey, Allison, it's Donald from the Talk of No podcast. Congratulations on your 200th episode. When I first met you at the Podcast Expo in 2007, I had never heard of the NoSilicast before. Yeah, I know, I was living in the dark ages. But since that day, I have been enlightened and I am now a convert. And I eagerly await each new episode that is released on Sunday nights. Even though I know a thing or two about this computer stuff, I still learn something new each and every episode. And the hardware and software reviews that you and the other NoSilicast listeners provide are invaluable to my purchasing decisions. Anyways, congratulations again, and here's to another 200 episodes or more.
Hi Allison, it's Will, and I'd like to thank you for 200 episodes of the NoSilicast. Actually, in my case, it's more like 125 episodes, because I started listening around episode 75. Although we better make that closer to 130. You see, I have a deep dark secret. I actually started listening to the NoSilicast twice. The first time I went all the way back and listened to your first 5 episodes, which was a mistake. No offense or anything. Let's just say that the second time around, when I'd been recommended to you by Adam Christensen's MacCast, you'd improved quite a bit. Recently you had a segment that encompasses all that's great about your show. You tried out Delicious Library from Delicious Monster, and it found that it didn't quite work for your needs. Then you discovered DVDpedia. I was kind of excited when you mentioned it, because this is the sister app to one of the things I use, called Bookpedia. I'd had Bookpedia for a while and gotten Delicious Library through MacHeist. I was considering switching over because of the great UI of Delicious Library, but a few features in Bookpedia kept me hanging back. You presented a great comparison and helped me make up my mind to stay with Bookpedia. Then in the next show, you got some great feedback from your amazing listeners about the other products Brugy make, and about some things that made your experience with DVDpedia even better. You also, if I remember correctly, got feedback from the chat room over at ustream.tv. Even so, you still managed to miss a few things, like the fact that all the PDAs support plugins, and the nifty little tip where if you option-click on the author field, or I suppose director for DVDpedia, it sorts by last name instead of first. Then, to top it all off, it turned out that one of the developers, Connor, was actually listening to the show. What I especially like about your show is that you don't have any special qualifications to be doing it, and this is meant as a compliment. You're not a web developer, you're not a programmer, you're not an audio geek like Victor Cahiao, you're just a normal Mac user like any of us. If one of us would run into a problem, chances are that you run into it while you're testing. But with you, you find a solution and share it with the whole show. I think this is why your listeners are so great, interested, and interactive, and please keep it up for another 200 episodes.
Allison. This is Connor P. from the International Mac Podcast and my new personal URL, connorp.me. I wanted to tell you about my favorite NoSilicast moment. There actually were two. The first was the podcast after the first one I ever listened to, episode number 117. Gosh, that was a long time ago. In the previous episode, you were talking about a piece of software called iFlash and how your son Kyle, since he was a 16-year-old, thought you were an idiot. I sent this email in reply, and you read it on the show. Hi, Allison. I am a new subscriber to your podcast, and I learned about you from the Typical Mac User Live podcast. After just listening to one episode, I really like your podcast. Also, I really appreciate the iFlash. That is something I plan to use when I get my MacBook Pro when Leopard arrives. See, I'm a teenager too, but being only 14, I still think my mom is awesome. Just wanted to drop you a line. Mac's rule. Connor. By the way, I didn't end up getting a MacBook Pro. I got a black MacBook. But anyway, when you read that on the show, I was so happy. I had been listening to podcasts for about 6 months, but you were the first podcaster to acknowledge the communications I had sent. I was so happy. I played that segment to my entire family over and over again. Well, I am now 16, and I do understand Kyle's point of view. However, whenever I have the occasional disagreement with my mom, I always think of you in that email. On a semi-related note, that was the last podcast where you actually did a movie review, which was Transformers the Movie. How about another one? My other favorite moment was more recently, on episode 191. After I wrote, and I use that word wrote lightly, because I actually didn't write it. Instead, I just copied and pasted it from other scripts on the internet. But anyway, after I wrote that script for you, and you told the Mac Roundtable crew that your pick was people who write scripts for you, the Mac Roundtable crew was so jealous, and I was just thinking over and over again, that's what you get in return for being so intimately connected and talking to your listeners back and forth. That's what I love about the NoSillaCast. It's just not your average podcast. It's truly a two-way street. As much as I like my geeky tech and terminal sessions, it isn't all tech all the time. You tell us about your life. You open up and invite us to share your life with you. That's something that no other podcaster has done. Goodness gracious, I've been rambling on for a long time. I truly am a member of the International Mac Podcast. Well, thanks again for everything, Allison, and here's to another 200 great episodes of the NoSillaCast. Bye for now.
Oh, that was wonderful. This is so much fun. By the way, I got to warn everybody listening, I hope you have a lot of time. Bart was kidding me that this might be a 200-minute show for the 200 episode, but for right now, I think we're going to be able to pull this off in about 90 minutes, I'm afraid. So I better keep going here. Ron Proto wrote in with a question that really made me think, and it's really appropriate to answer it for this particular episode. He titled his email, How Do You Do It? Here's what he wrote. I've been listening to your podcast for quite some time. I listen to you on several other podcasts also. You do a great job. Thank you for sharing your Mac smarts with the Mac community. This is what I know about you. You wax cars, you're an avid exerciser, at least that's what I think I gleaned from some of your comments. You hold a full-time job, you have a family, you take vacations and side trips, you attend conferences, you help your friends with all sorts of things, including taking them to the Apple Store to buy a new Mac. That's tough duty. You are busy, busy, busy. I love that he said that, because isn't that what Debbie T said just last week? Busy, busy, busy. Anyway, he goes on to say, okay, how do you find the time to do all that? What tools, tips, and tricks do you use to stay organized and on top of things? That could be a topic for one of your shows, not necessarily the Mac Roundtable. Although some of those guys seem to juggle as many things as you, like Tim Verporten, David Sparks, Don McAllister, and Chuck Joyner. Okay, Chuck's crazy. He's got like 72 shows, you know. On second thought, that was me talking, not Ron. Anyway, he goes on to say, on second thought, they don't juggle as much as you do. I doubt they wax their friends' cars. I bet your audience would like to know how you do all you do and stay calm, cool, and collected. And the best of all, have fun doing it. I know you're having fun because if you weren't, you would have stopped doing it a long time ago. Keep up the great work. I look forward to your podcast each week. Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words, Ron. I'm humbled by what you say. Doing this show is one of the great joys of my life. I've been thinking a lot about this question, and I think I can explain it. I hate to disappoint you, but I'm afraid it's not because I embrace getting things done, or I have some great organizational method or some cool gadgets you could go by that help me juggle all these things. It's all about choices. First of all, I choose to live only 7 miles from work. A lot of people around here where I live drive an hour or more to get to work. Not me. My commute is only about 20 minutes one way. I know you're thinking 20 minutes for 7 miles. Well, this is Los Angeles, after all. That is a really good time to get to work. Speaking of work, I choose to work 40-hour weeks. I don't work overtime at all. I know this has limited my career, and I made that choice with my eyes open. I know so many people who complain about how they never get to see their kids, who never get to go on vacation without working while they're gone. I have no patience for these people. You chose it. Live with the consequences. If you don't want to work extra hours, don't. Turns out slavery was outlawed quite a few years ago. No one makes you do this but yourself. As I said, there are consequences to choosing this life, but you do have a choice. I also choose to work out every day. Many people say to me, "Oh, Allison, I wish I had your energy. I just don't have the energy to work out." Well, here's a little secret those of us who work out know. It turns out the energy comes from exercise. Picture this. I go to the gym at lunch. I watch this dopey soap opera. All my children, for those of you who are interested. I run or I lift weights. I then eat a half a sandwich, an apple, and some water. I take a shower. I come back to work, and I'm on fire. I eat these other people alive. I mean, they've gone out and had burritos and beer for lunch, and they come back and they fall asleep at their desks, and I'm running around taking advantage of them. It's awesome. So working out, while it does take time, it actually adds energy. Timing was also a big part of the trick here. 4 years ago, my daughter Lindsay went away to college, leaving me with her teenage brother, Kyle, for entertainment. Turns out teenage boys don't want to spend all that much time with their moms, as you've just heard. So podcasting came along right before she left, and I really believe it helped me stay sane after she did go. Instead of little kids who want constant attention and us loving every minute of giving it to them, I now had a lot more free time. By the way, that's something I did give up. I used to do a lot of cross-stitch, and I used to knit and crochet like a madwoman, always busy with a project. But I gave all that up when I got my first Mac laptop and I realized I had something else I wanted to do. It's also important to note what I don't do that most normal people do. I don't plan elaborate meals. I mean, you've heard about this, right? Since we eat the same thing every week, there's no planning going on. We have very carefully planned meals. I mean, there's no future planning. You don't have to think up, oh, what are we going to have for dinner tonight? And, you know, like read, I don't know, a cookbook or recipe or something. We have these carefully planned meals that take about 10 to 15 minutes to prepare. I'm telling you, you're not going to hear the word sauté around this Sheridan household, that's for sure. I do most of the cooking, but Steve does the grocery shopping, the laundry, and the ironing. I do clean up, I do the dishes at least. But the real secret behind all of this is Steve. During the live show, Steve moderates the chat room, cooks dinner, and brings me a refreshing beverage. He listens to every show. He offers advice and guidance about what works and what doesn't work. As you know, he feeds my gadget habit. As I look at my monitor, my microphone, my boom arm for my mic, even my vibration mount for the boom, all were gifts from Steve. He supports me, helps me take the time necessary to do a quality job. He encourages me to go to the Podcast Expo and Macworld and Demo and D and all those other conferences to learn and schmooze with the other podcasters and other people in the community. He never once complains about the time I take away from chores or anything else. As long as I wax his car and power wash the driveway, he's pretty much happy to carry the rest of the load. I know not everyone has this kind of support, and I never take it for granted. Thank you, Steve.
Hello, this is Debbie T. from splashofstyle.com. Congratulations to Allison on show number 200. I found Allison and the Nocella cast back in February of 2006. I heard her MacBook Pro review on the MacCast podcast and immediately subscribed to her in iTunes. She became one of my favorite podcasters. Together with Bart Bouchotz, she has kept me entertained on my drive to and from work for over 3 years. Wow, 3 years! I can't believe I've been listening for that long. My earliest memory is show number 30. Well, I don't remember anything else about that show except for the fact that she was ranting about Samsung and their horrible, incompetent customer service. Thanks to Allison, I will never be able to look at a Samsung product without thinking of her and feeling guilty for even considering to purchase. And to this day, I have never bought anything made by Samsung because of that guilt. Thanks a lot, Allison. But anyway, happy 200th episode. Here's to 200 more, 500 more, 1,000 more, and beyond. Congratulations on your success, and keep up the good work. I'm staying subscribed.
Hi, Allison. Ed Tobias here. Longtime listener and even longer acquaintance. I wanted to thank you so much for giving us all the Nozilla cast. You have a very down-to-earth way of helping us get more out of our Macs. I particularly like the way that you make everyone identify the problem to be solved. Of course, I guess that's the engineer in me. I also like how you don't hold back on those things that don't cut the mustard. Combine that with the spear throwing, I mean chit-chat, across the pond, and your show is number one in my book. Thanks again for all the hard work, and here's to another 200.
With Alison, agus Cogard, agus Moore, Conan, Dá, Chéad, Clara, all.
Hi, Alison, and congratulations on reaching your 200th show. For those of you listeners who don't speak Irish,
this is Justin and Dave here from the MacCrack podcast, hosted over at MacCrack.com.
Hold on. Dude, you just totally stole Alison's line there.
What do you mean, Dave? I'm in the middle of doing the congratulations thing here, and can you stop interrupting me?
Sorry, but Alison uses the line NoSillaCast hosted over at podfeet.com. You just totally copied it. I'm pretty sure she has it painted by now. Probably gets a royalty every time someone uses it.
Okay. Tommy Chavroch, Augustahi, Conan MacCrack Podcast, Storalta, MacCrack.com. There, I'm pretty sure the patent won't hold up for the Irish language. Just in case, get the SciStar lawyers on the phone, will you? While we're here, we may as well give a shout out to Honda Bob, who can be found hanging out and pimping out Hondas and Acuras in the LA and Orange County areas over at hdabob.com.
Get him to give your Honda or Acura some TLC on 562-531-2321.
HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide.
Dude, isn't there some Irish guy who appears in the show too? Or is he from Belgium? I can't remember.
Dave, that would be Bart.
Bart?
Yes, Bart Bouchotz from BartB.ie. Remember we met him when we came back from the States earlier this year?
Oh yeah, and when we brought back iPhoto to him in Leixlip.
It was Aperture and Minute, but I guess close enough for government work.
Well done on sticking out there to Bart and for taking all the abuse you get from Alison.
Oh, come on, dude, it hardly constitutes abuse. I would call it spirited debate.
Okay.
Well, I guess we can't go without giving a pat on the back to Steve either.
Steve Jobs?
No, Steve Sheridan, Alison's wonderful husband, man in a million, one to be treasured, one whom I hope she appreciates, and one whom in no way, shape or form paid us to say any of those things.
As Jane and Pert might say, a bone's a bloke.
Well, congratulations once again, Al, on reaching the big 200, and may we see another 200 plus.
Hear, hear, and thanks for the hospitality shown to two stray Irish blokes on our visit to LA earlier this year. Hip hip.
Hooray.
Hip hip.
Hooray.
Hip hip.
Hooray. Ooh, that was fun, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was. Dude, I'm glad you didn't mention the photograph on Flickr.
Well, I thought it best not to. I mean, for me, it was totally the French maids that brought me in to view it.
Oh, totally, dude. I mean, just, they were so hot, and they can clean my gaff anytime.
Oh, for sure. Suits you, sir.
Who suits you, sir?
Oh, crap, Dave, this thing is still recording. How do you switch it off?
Dude, you click the button there? No, dude, the other button, it's a Mac.
Okay, there, I got it.
Ooh, can you imagine how embarrassing it would have been if we hadn't noticed?
I know. Anyway, let's get back to talking about those French maids.
Oh my gosh, how am I supposed to be able to keep doing this show after listening to that? I've got all this Irish No Product Review stuff coming and I'm supposed to keep up after that. Oh, thank you so much, guys. That was wonderful. It's kind of interesting timing that they mentioned Steve right after everything I said. So now is the segment where I want to also explain that one of the reasons the show is so easy is because of Bart. Because you remember in the old days, I used to do a 40-minute show, and I had to write 40 minutes worth of good text to talk about what I was going to do, you know, to write my script. And now I don't have to do that anymore. I do about 30 minutes or 25 minutes, 20 minutes if I don't feel like doing much more. So basically, my job has been cut in half because of getting to do chit-chat across the pond. And he has become such a dear friend over the, I don't know how long it's been, a couple of years, I guess. But it's really, really nice to have him on the show. I enjoy it. I think, as Bart has said before, we would do this even if you guys weren't listening. So anyway, let me kick in and do some, you know, serious NoSillaCast work here. There we go. Well, a ton of people have asked me why they couldn't find my show in the Ustream application on the iPhone. I tried it myself, and sure enough, you could search and you would not find NoSillaCast in the application. So I wrote to the Ustream folks, and I got a very interesting email back. They told me that my show would have to be approved to be in the application. They gave me the criteria for approval. Here's what they wrote. Only streams approved for the iPhone can be watched through the application. We're working hard to meet all of Apple's requirements and provide users the best experience we can. We're periodically reviewing and approving channels for the app. We're looking for family-friendly channels. The characteristics of an approved channel include, but are not limited to, not broadcasting nudity of any kind, not broadcasting vulgar content, not broadcasting content you do not own the copyright to, not broadcasting any illegal activities, following Ustream's terms of service, following Apple's iPhone's terms and conditions, having a show logo, having at least one recorded video. Well, luckily, my show meets all of those criteria easily. I wrote back, amongst other things, I explained that sometimes I send my mother CDs in my shows, so I know they gotta be clean. In about 2 weeks, they wrote back and they told me I'd been approved. Now, what does that mean to you? Let's say you're out and about, near Wi-Fi, of course, so not that out and about, and you have your trusty iPhone or iPod Touch with you, and you realize that 5 p.m. GMT minus 8 on a Sunday night just crept up on you. You can whip out your device, open the Ustream application, log in, and you can not only watch the video live, you can even chat in the chat room. So, on Tuesday night, I ran a little test. I tweeted out asking for some testers. April, Ian, and Mark all jumped in for me, and all three of them told me that the application kept crashing. Bummer! They also said that when it was working, it would pause and buffer for a long time. I tested it out myself too, and guess what? Buffering and a crash. So, thanks to the three troopers who gave it a shot, I really appreciate that. But it looks like this is going to be one of those things that you play with to find out what it will be in the future someday. It kind of reminds me of about, 100 years ago, when my buddy Ron, Steve, and I worked and we got webcams in both our houses. These are little tiny Logitech webcams, I think they were, little tiny ones. And we downloaded See You, See Me from Carnegie Mellon University. Armed with a phone to each of our ears, we spent hours configuring and testing this until finally got a little 1-inch diagonal grayscale picture of each other moving at maybe 4 frames per second. We were thrilled and amazed. It was as though we had made fire. I remember saying at the time that clearly it wasn't amazing that I could see someone who was only a mile and a half from my house, but I could see the future, a future that is a reality now. I mean, I was able to talk to Lindsay for hours for free in full motion video while she was in Italy. I get to talk with Bart weekly in Ireland, and I take it completely for granted now. I was able to have Nightwise give me advice on how to make Linux stop working on my old PC through full motion video from Belgium. So don't look at the Ustream app as a big issue that it's a bit buggy right now, because I'm sure they're going to fix it up and it'll work, and I appreciate what they're doing, and I can see the future. It's just not here quite yet. Well, last week I had a business trip out to Virginia, and while I was out there, I had the great pleasure of getting to meet Greg DeVore from ScreenSteps. I was kind of bummed because Trevor was out of town, but Greg and I had a great time. We spent a little time talking about family and getting to know each other, but you can imagine how that went. Before long, we were geeking out, talking about the development environment they use, and I got to learn how they got started in this business. It turns out Greg was creating documentation for some customers, and Trevor started writing software to make it easier for Greg. I think a lot of times people write software that helps them solve their own problems, and then they realize, hey, other people might have the same problem, and they can start marketing it. Greg also told me how often he works with software where he just sits there wishing the developer would use ScreenSteps to create their documentation. And now that he mentions it, I've started thinking the same thing, like, oh man, if you'd just done this in ScreenSteps. I find myself thinking about how to make beautiful documentation with it, and I wonder, why don't they use it? If you're a developer, please buy ScreenSteps for us and for you. If you're a natural teacher, buy ScreenSteps for yourself to make it even more fun to share your knowledge. I've been getting a lot of feedback from people who have bought it, and they're telling me all these crazy things they've been doing with it. I should start making that part of the ad so you can see what other people are doing. Very inventive, different kinds of things. So, I know, I wanted to remember to tell you, a few weeks back, Greg and Trevor did a webinar for advanced users, but this week, or a week from now, on Tuesday, April 29th, they're going to do two webinars for beginners. You know, it seems funny that you'd have to do this because ScreenSteps is so easy to use. You wouldn't think you'd need it. But I'm telling you, every time I watch one of their videos or I watch a webinar, I learn one other step that I go, whoa, that is so much easier. I think I mentioned that last week. Anyway, on April 29th, there's two times, 9 a.m. Eastern and 2 p.m. Eastern. So go check it out. I put a link in the show notes so you can see when it is. And don't forget, if you stay on, you can actually ask questions. They're going to do Q&A at the end. And they spent a lot of time doing it the last one. It really worked out well. If you haven't made your life easier yet, and you go to this seminar and you decide you got to have ScreenSteps, don't forget to use the NOSILA coupon code, that's my name spelled backwards in all capital letters, to get 25% off.
Hey, Allison, this is Matt Hillier from the Stealth Mac Podcast. You know me from the chat room as Balding Nerd. I was asked to record my favorite moments from your podcast, and to be honest, I can't isolate it down to just one. I love the way you review your products with that no-nonsense approach, and I love the way you and Bart discuss various aspects of security and how you bring it all down to a common level that the average user can understand. Overall, Allison, I've enjoyed everything you've done for the first 200 episodes of the NOSILAcast podcast, and here's hoping that you have 200 more that are just as great. And I'm sorry I can't be in the chat room on the night of your recording of your 200th episode, but Vegas calls.
Allison, happy 200th episode on the NOSILAcast. I may not have been one of your more longer listeners. I've only been listening to you for about a year or so, and I've really enjoyed it, especially your chit-chat across the pond and those famous Honda Bob ads. Let's keep up the good work, and I'd like to see some more episodes like... Leo and the Gizwith. Let's go for 1,000. Okay, well, happy 200th, and I'm staying subscribed.
Hi, Allison. This is listener Kenny L. in New Jersey calling to offer sincere and heartfelt congratulations on this, the 200th episode of the NOSILAcast podcast. I switched to the Mac around 2006 and started listening to the NOSILAcast around 2007, and I never miss an episode anymore. I either listen real-time on the Ustream or sometimes on my iPod when on a treadmill or on an airplane, but it's always educational, thanks to the wealth of knowledge and experience brought to the table by your frequent contributors, and I mean people like Victor Cahiao, Robert Lackman, Tim Verporten, and Bart Buschatz. It's also fun because of the interesting repartee back and forth and good-natured jabs that you share with those people from time to time. The podcast is delightfully unique in the sense that you don't bore us to tears with iPhone information or announcements about OS 10 releases, things that we can find a million other places. Instead, you give us information about problems you personally have or that other people have using the Mac platform, and ways to address those using shareware, hardware, things that are commonly available to us Mac users. It's also great having accessibility with you because you respond frequently to our tweets and emails and, of course, on the Ustream. So it's just a wonderful experience, sort of like family. Anyway, keep up the good work. Here's looking forward to the next 200 episodes in the NOSILAcast.
Hi, Allison. It's Elliot here from ElliotMediaGroup.com, and I just wanted to wish you a huge congratulations on your 200th show. I've learned of so many cool tips, tricks, and pieces of software from listening to you, and have really enjoyed sending in reviews of my own. And of course, listening to you and Bart Naturalway is always very entertaining. So here's to many more years of a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Keep up the great work!
Hi, Allison. This is Lenny Chernoff. Congratulations and kudos on your 200th podcast. I actually shut off the NOSILAcast broadcast this Monday when I usually listen to it on my walk with the dogs to think of actually two items that impresses me about your podcast. One is the fact whether you're 63, 83, or 23, you speak to all audiences. And the second part of it is that you put a real large dose of humanity into your broadcasts. I love the way you prepare for your broadcasts, and I love the way you talk about your family, whether it's Steve's video editing, your kids' shenanigans, your mother's journey into geekdom, or what Honda Bob has done for your Honda, or how you polish your car. It's just wonderful to listen to it. Love your podcasts. Keep on broadcasting, and looking forward to the next 200 editions of No Silicast.
Hey, Alison, this is a gang from the International Mac Podcast.
And some of their long-standing friends.
We thought we'd send you a little something to say huge congratulations for hitting 200 shows.
And wow, they have been a lot of fun.
From Dumb Question Corner
to Chit Chat Across the Pond.
I like that one especially.
Your technology podcast with an ever... didn't quite hit that one, did I? I might just try that again. Your technology podcast with an ever... Give it one more go, Gaz. Come on, you can do it. Your technology podcast with an ever... No, that'll have to do. Anyway,
your technology podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias.
Which we all know is a rather large bias, really.
Keeps us entertained and informed.
If that's not enough, you let us be part of the production and join in every week over on Ustream.
For lighthearted band. Alright, I'm leaving that one in.
For light-hearted banter and a great time.
Here's to another great 200 episodes.
We thank you for the inspiration you are to us all.
Your friends,
the IMP team. Stu Helm.
Jason C. Martin.
Mark Bujots.
Connor P.
Will.
Sebastian.
Paul Shadwell.
Oh, by the way, it's Gazmaz here. As if you hadn't guessed.
Well, I think I'm getting a... little choked up here. This is just so nice, everyone. This is amazing. This is just fantastic. Okay, I'm not gonna cry. I'm gonna be good. I gotta keep going. I got some more tech for you. By the way, I do like though that you enjoy all the weird little side stories about the car waxing and Honda Bob and everything. That's good because I can't stay on topic. In case you haven't noticed that. All right, gonna give you some content again here. Well, we haven't talked about open source tools in general in a really long time. I heard recently on a CNET Live broadcast about a cool site dedicated to open source software for the Mac. If you're unfamiliar with the term open source, what it means is software that the developer has decided to share with the world, not only to use, but to get the original source code and maybe modify, redistribute in many cases. From a user perspective, it means it's free to use. You don't have to pay dollars. You do have to pay attention to the license, but you don't have to pay anything to use it. The site that they talked about was called opensourcemac.org. Now, this is not by any means an inclusive list of all open source software for the Mac. For that, you should run, not walk, to sourceforge.net. But I got to say, it's a bit intimidating, and it's kind of difficult to find your way around and find software that you're sure runs on the Mac. At Open Source Mac, they've made it really pretty with big application icons, and they've sorted things into categories so you can find the type of tool you're looking for. They have web browsing, video playback, instant messaging, email, utilities, the list goes on and on. Now, as I looked through the list, I found out that I either use or know about 3/4 of the applications already. But think about that. Somebody like me finds 25% of the stuff things I've never heard of and look pretty fun. For example, I found out there's a Windows emulator for the Mac called Q. How did I not ever hear about this? I got to go try that out if I can dig up a copy of Windows. I think I may have burned all my... I'm sure I have one around. There was a piece of software called Bean. It's a word processor. Of course, the minute I heard about Bean on there, I heard about it everywhere. Apparently, I'm the last one to know about it. But you know how much I hate Microsoft Word? Well, not as much as I hate PowerPoint. By the way, my new slogan is Death to PowerPoint. But, you know, Word is pretty doggone annoying. So I'm going to start using Bean for a while and see what it's like. I bet you'll find a bunch of new applications you've never played with before. Go check them out for free at opensourcemac.org. By the way, have I ever mentioned that I hate Microsoft Word? Oh yeah, I just did in the previous segment. That's right. But let me give you a great example of why I hate that. Two examples. Well, as you probably know, California is bankrupt. So the schools are looking for every way they can to save money. One way they've come up with is they don't print out class notes anymore. They send a link to the kids' email and expect us to print them out on the ever-efficient inkjet printer. Well, no worries, except for one thing. Kyle's physics teacher sent the file in Microsoft Word and included equations in the file. Well, I'm assuming she must have used some equation editor that's Windows only, because when Kyle opened the notes in Word on the Mac, all of the equations were missing. Okay, here's the part that shows it's Microsoft's fault, though. I suggested Kyle download NeoOffice, which is an open source equivalent for, office automation. He installed it, and guess what? It opened the physics notes perfectly, including all of the equations. Now think about it. That means that Microsoft Office was less compatible with itself on two different operating systems than NeoOffice. Right. You're kidding me. Well, anyway, now I do have to be fair. I'm running Office 10 on Kyle's machine, which is two revisions back from the latest version. But, it was so easy to just download and install NeoOffice. But let me give you another example. Steve got his birthday present this week. He got it 2 days early. It was a 24-inch iMac. Well, I broke down so that he can't actually work on what he's doing for the four-year episode. See, he can't bring audio files into GarageBand on the G5. We finally figured out, evidently there's some problem. If you're running Leopard on a G5, it actually makes GarageBand incompatible. Nice. So getting him that iMac was essential to his success in the future. So anyway, the reason I bring this all up is Steve was going through installing applications on his new machine, and he needed Excel for the work he's doing on the four-year anniversary show. Well, we have the home version, which gives us three license keys. One for me, one for Kyle, one for Steve. Perfect, right? Shouldn't be a problem. But what happens when he wants to put Office on the new machine? That's a fourth machine. There's not an obvious way to uninstall it from the old machine and actually, harvest that license key. But when he tried to put it on the new machine, it kept crashing. Now, I'm not sure if that's why it was crashing, but, for crying out loud, it was a fresh-from-scratch OS X install on the new machine, and all he did was install Office on it, and it fails. Well, I went through and I ran some terminal glop to remove the license from the old machine, but, he was getting worried about time, so guess what he did? You got it. He downloaded and installed NeoOffice. It easily opened up his Excel file, and he was able to edit, change formats, did not miss a beat. So the answer is open source for the win.
Hey, Steve. George from Tulsa. Thanks for the invite to describe my favorite aspect of Allison's show. No question, it's her voice. I think she'd make a great audiobook reader. That said, I've learned a lot from Allison. I first learned of screen steps, caffeine, and Magical on Allison's show, and don't know how I got by without them. Then there's Bart Bouchotz, whose recommendations and technical insight are superb. A great podcast.
Allison, on to Bob. Congratulations on your 200th show. Fantastic. I think the best moment for me on your show was when the two guys from MacCrack, I don't know where the heck they're from, I think it's Australia. Anyway, we had a blast at your house whenever they met me right after Christmas last year. That was fun. We had a blast. Anyway, congratulations on your 200th show. It's great to have you around. Bye.
Hey, Allison. It's Crazy Listener James congratulating you on 200 shows. It's hard to believe that I've been subjecting myself to these shows for over 3 years now. I'm still waiting for something useful to come out of listening. Oh, I'm just kidding. So, Steve asked us to send in our favorite moments or favorite aspects of the show. And I could be my usual obnoxious self and say that my favorite parts are when you talk about me. But that would be completely false. My favorite aspect of the show has to be the close-knit family of geeks, meaning us, listeners, that you have managed to create. It was really apparent when I came over the other night to hang out that you're just so entrenched in the tech community, spreading the good word and helping out wherever you can. It's like you're another mother to us all. Mama Geek. That's who you are. So, take care, and I'm looking forward to the next 200 episodes. Crazy James, out!
Hey, Allison, Margaret here. Seems like it was only 100 episodes ago that I was sending you in a greeting and telling you how much I appreciate your podcast. And look at it. We're now at milestone 200. Congratulations. You broke into this podcasting thing when it was still very new, even though it had some established stars like Laporte. It didn't faze you, and you went on to create a very successful podcast. Now, I know your listeners have heard the stories more than once of how you almost gave up podcasting, and I think you should tell that story again for any new listeners. Anyway, I'm wishing you a happy 200th episode. Look forward to doing this again at episode number 300. Bye.
Allison, good show. 200 episodes. That's fantastic. This is Pat Dangler, and I want to offer you a few words of advice. Keep the magnets away from the computer and the wine in the sippy cup. Congrats, and I look forward to many more episodes of the NoSillaCast.
Hi, Allison. It's Ron. Congratulations on a landmark 200th NoSillaCast. It really seems like only yesterday that you were putting your first studio together and getting ready to record that first fateful NoSillaCast. And now here we are, 4 years and 200 episodes later, and the show just keeps getting bigger and better. So here's to the last 200, and here's to your listeners looking forward to the next 200 episodes. And remember, we'll be listening.
Dumb Question Corner. Who's the smartest, funniest, kindest, and dare I say it, cutest Mac podcaster? Sorry, Adam. Sorry, Bart. Sorry, Chuck. Sorry, Katie. Sorry, Kenneth. Sorry, Tim. And sorry, Victor. 'Cause we all know the answer to this question. It's Allison. Thank you for 200 episodes, Allison. And I, for one, am really looking forward to the next 200. Love you long time.
Hey, Allison, Slough here from SessionsWithSlough.com, an audio geek podcast with a complete and total Macintosh bias. Congratulations on your 200th episode. My goodness, you've come a long way, baby. Keep up the great work.
Hi, Allison, it's Jane from Perth. So you've just turned 200. Well, you're looking pretty darn good for someone of that age. You must tell me a secret to good-looking longevity sometime. It only seems like a year ago that we were celebrating the 3-year anniversary of the NoSillaCast. Wait a minute, it was only a year ago. How time flies when you're having fun. Well, over the past 200 episodes, we've seen the podcast evolve with many new contributors and popular sections, such as Chit Chat Across the Pond, Dumb Question Corner, and of course the ever-increasing number of listeners producing their own versions of Honda Bob advertisements. And then came along Ustream, to give the listeners a live view of the NoSillaCast weekly recording. This opened up a whole new aspect to our involvement with the podcast and your production techniques. Week after week, NoSillaCast fans sit in front of their Ustream screens, watching in awe as you compile the latest show, whilst we chat away together via the text screen. It's always fun to watch as you read your script, manipulate GarageBand, read the live chat, and respond to our comments. You surely are the queen of multitasking. So I would just like to say good on you, and thanks for all of the 200 shows and the opportunity you provided for me to air some of my ramblings. And here's to the continuing success of Allison Sheridan's NoSillaCast podcast. Cheers, Allison. Enjoy your 200th show. I know I will.
Okay, guys, I am really choking up here. That was just so sweet from all of you. That was really, really nice. If you're not in the chat room, what you don't realize what also just happened is between right after that segment, Steve walked in with some jelly lenses, which are little lenses that you stick to your cameras to make weird special effects, some chocolates from George from Tulsa, and a gigantic 4x6 foot poster. With, I'm looking at it right now, it says, congratulations on 200 podcasts on the top. It's got my logo. It's got me waxing Robert Lockman's car. It's got Bart. It's got me with my first microphone. Kyle, Steve, crazy listener James, the picture where he had my family in the background. It's got Lindsay playing on her laptop. It's got Steve and Kyle and I. It's got me and my buddy Harry, my 80 or 90-year-old buddy Harry. It's got the International Mac Podcast logo, the Mac Roundtable logo, Screen Steps, Tim Verport, and Honda Bob holding a transmission, the Mac ReviewCast logo, photography and the Mac logo, a picture of Robert Lockman, a picture of Melissa, the Mac Mommy, the Mac Power Podcast, 1+0, your Mac Doctor. It's got Debbie T. Splash of Style. It's even got the Justin and David, the Mac Crack guys. It's got Katie and David, and it's just gorgeous. It's just so cool. So I hope it's okay with George that I scan this in and make a small version of it for the show, because this is just crazy. Oh, George. Oh, the PDF was in there? Oh, great. Wow. I'm sorry. This is this is a lot more than I thought we were talking about here. Okay. Well, let's see. I was going to do a Honda Bob ad, but I'm not sure if it's just a little redundant now, since everybody's mentioned Honda Bob, and I believe his phone number's already been up here. But I do want to tell you a story. So last night, Lindsay dragged out some home movies to torture her boyfriend. So she loves these home movies. I mean, she just is crazy about them. So she found this one of her about like 2.5 years old, almost three. She's helping Steve wash his car. And of course, I use help in quotes. But so they're working on the back end of his car. And suddenly Lindsay points at something and she has this intake of breath. She goes, oh, and she points at something. And Steve says, yes, can you tell what that says? She points letter by letter and goes, H-O-N-D-A. And she looks at Steve and says, what's that say? And he says, that spells Honda, honey. Remember that name because you'll want a Honda someday. Isn't that hilarious? So like 19 years ago, we were brainwashing our child that she should make sure she never drives anything but a Honda. And why do you think that was? That's because she'd have to go to Honda Bob, and otherwise she wouldn't be allowed to. If you're lucky enough to live in the LA Orange County areas and you would like outstanding and convenient in-home care for your Honda or Acura, please give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.ie, who is fresh back from Belgium.
Unfortunately, I picked up a very nasty cold on the plane to Belgium, was sick for most of the time I was in Belgium, was just starting to feel better when I got the plane home, and I picked up another one.
Plane travel is bad for health.
Actually, I think it is. See, I thought we'd segue nicely into Bart having been in Belgium, but...
Okay, we started there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then we segue into Boeing and Airbus. excuse me. No, I was in Belgium for the week, and it was a very strange week because I had absolutely no internet whatsoever for a whole week.
Not even on the iPhone? Horrible.
Well, no, because I decided, you know, the iPhone comes with data roaming turned off, and I thought that there might be a good reason for that. So I looked into the roaming charges for what it would cost me if I were to turn data roaming on.
Did you scream when you saw it?
Oh, yeah. At first, I thought the font was very, very small. So at first, it looked like 0.01 cent per kilobyte.
Which might have worked.
But it was 0.01 euro per kilobyte, i.e. 1 cent.
Ah, okay.
Which means that one episode of the Nosilicast would cost about 40 euro.
Which is about, what, $50?
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, it's worth that, of course.
Of course, but it really, really, really would add up very, very quickly.
Right.
Even calls were a ridiculous rate, and that was just Edge. There's no 3G roaming available in Belgium.
Wow.
So I was most annoyed.
Yeah, that's awful.
Because a megabyte for 10 euro, not good value.
Definitely, definitely.
So I think the EU want to see these kind of things fall, and they want to put pressures on the providers, but goodness, they have a long way to go. What was it? I was paying 56 cent per minute for calls I made, and to receive a call was 27 cent a minute, I think, or 29.
That's like 15 years ago pricing. That's nuts.
Yep. Well, roaming within Europe is horrid. You know, people always want, oh, we can't lose our sovereignty, we can't have United States of Europe. I want a United States of Europe so we have one sodding phone operator.
And one iPhone, one Mac store and all those kinds of things, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if it was a little tighter together, we could have a single operator for the whole continent.
That would be awesome. So yeah. I know I missed you like crazy. Anybody who's following my tweets, it was like every day, I miss Bart. Even if we're just chatting and saying nonsense, I miss talking to you.
Yeah, it was very, I just felt completely isolated. Which I suppose, I mean, I was visiting family and stuff, so I had family to keep me entertained, but it was still very strange. It was like being in a whole different world.
Yeah.
It was only a few hundred miles. I mean, within America, that wouldn't cut you off.
Yeah, that's true. I did think it was interesting that I missed you when you live, what, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 miles away, and you moved 200 miles farther away, and it was like, God, I miss him.
Yeah, but that's because by moving from the internet to not on the internet is infinitely far.
That's right. You moved to Mars, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It's very strange because I ended up, I was kind of hoping maybe to bump into Nightwise and stuff when I was over there.
Oh, yeah.
And listener Peter, and, you know, there's a couple of people who I know from Belgium via this show, ironically. And by not having any internet whatsoever, that didn't really work out, and I wasn't thinking ahead because I'm very bad at thinking ahead. Oh. So I hadn't anything planned. That was when I got there. I went, oh, wouldn't it be nice to? And I was like, hang on a sec, I don't have any internet. I don't have Twitter. I don't have anything. Ah!
And the family doesn't have any of those things?
Well, I stay with my grandmother.
Okay.
She's, no offense, but she's barely mastered the telephone.
Oh. Okay, so I guess not.
Yeah, and the only possible choice was the kids' laptop, which is a Windows machine that the kids look after.
Yeah.
And I was tempted until I saw that the Norton antivirus was saying it hadn't been updated in 6 months and that it was overdue and they needed to pay.
Oh, jeez.
And I thought, there is no way in hell any of my usernames and passwords are going into this thing.
Oh, that's a good point. Almost anything you do, you'd have to put your username or password in.
Yeah. And I thought, well, I'll just use their DSL modem, but they had it set up over USB, so that the actual modem was no good.
Oh.
So, you know, I've briefly thought, yes, I'm going to get... No.
Oh, how sad to be that close to Nightwise and not get to go see him.
Well, yeah, although, you know, Belgium's, well, big is possibly the wrong word, but I only had a bicycle, so Belgium is very big from that point of view. So I'm not entirely sure how close we were, but I'm sure we could have arranged something via the wonderful public transport system in that country.
But wasn't to be
this time. But I'll be there again.
All right. So what's up next?
Well, I just wanted to just follow up from something we left on before, which is that thanks to a nice Nosilicast listener, one of the many very nice Nosilicast listeners, pointing out how silly I was, and that I could easily change my RAM. And the last time we'd spoke about it, I had ordered the new RAM for €33.33, including delivery, and it arrived just in time for me to go to Belgium, which is nice.
Oh, nice.
And I put it in, and it was unscrew 4 screws, lift up a little piece of metal, clip out the old RAM, clip in the new RAM, screw in the 4 screws again. It was very trivial, very straightforward. And the difference is quite astounding, really, particularly in aperture. I always felt aperture was taxing my system. It was usable, especially if you used the P mode a lot of the time for quickly scanning through images. Now I forget to use the P mode, and I don't notice.
What is the P mode?
Preview mode.
That's where you're not bringing up the full images, you're just bringing up the previews?
Yeah, so it does, excuse me, so it doesn't do, you know, if you've made 50 adjustments to the image, it doesn't calculate each of those to show you the image, it just renders the preview.
So you
can really quickly scan through your images if you're looking for something, or if you're just scanning through them to keyword them, or if you're just scanning through them to rate them. You know, it's just really snappy, really quick. And it, you know, it's a very good idea if that's what you're doing rather than editing images. And then you just hit the P key again and you flip back into normal mode, and then you can do all your adjustments and stuff.
Okay.
So I used to use P mode a lot. I just got into the habit because with 1 gig of RAM, aperture was perfectly usable, but you had to remember to use P mode if you were scanning through images or you very quickly got frustrated. Now I just forget and it doesn't bother me.
Well, good. But that makes me think I might want to try it once in a while because sometimes it seems kind of slow.
Yeah, if you're just scanning through images, hit P and then you'll see one of the icons will turn yellow to show that you're in preview mode, and then away you go.
So you don't want to do any editing while you're in P mode, or it probably won't even let you?
It won't let you. No, it just won't let you. They're all, you know, you can hit the H to bring up the heads-up display, and it'll just be all grayed out.
Hey, good news. I found Bart and I were trying to remember beforehand who it was gave him the hint about saying, why don't you just put more RAM in it? It was Nick Brennan.
You didn't give me a chance, because didn't I say I thought it was either listener Nick or listener George that
no,
wasn't
you
listener
said,
George
You
Tulsa.
Said Georgia wasn't George. You didn't say Nick.
And then I said, or was it Nick?
No, you didn't.
I did.
We didn't record it, so you can't prove it.
That's true. And I wasn't recording on my end either.
So it is Nick Brennan. Thank you, Nick, for that that hot little tip. What a funny thing.
Yes,
and all this time,
absolutely,
you could have been happier. But now you're happy.
Yes, absolutely. And I just sort of, to round it off, just the combination of the RAM and the monitor calibration tool has basically turned my three-year-old MacBook Pro into what feels like a brand new machine.
Hot dogs. That's awesome.
Yeah. Which reminds me, I have to calibrate again because it's been a month.
And you have to play with your toy every month, right?
Yeah, and it reminds you as well when you boot up. It says, you haven't calibrated in over a month. You know, monitors do change. Like, okay.
Hey, I heard somebody say on some podcast somewhere talking about that you should make sure that you've warmed your monitor up,
yes,
for like a half hour before you do it.
The software actually tells you.
Leave it at least
an hour.
Oh, wow.
The software is very good. It's sort of a tutorial. It's a step-by-step tutorial, and it explains what it's doing, and you keep hitting next and stuff, and it tells you straight up, leave it, make sure it's on for an hour, and turn off any sort of power-saving features.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
That would rather mess it up. Yes, so that's an important one.
All right, so we also have Security Light that doesn't look so light, but because we got 48 things on there, but it's all good stuff.
Security bloated.
I actually started the Security Light this time. Aren't you proud of me?
Yes, I am, actually.
Just on top of it.
Good. I just stuck in a news story that you didn't have, because I finally got caught up on all my RSS feeds from a week of being away from the internet, which took quite some time. Mm. And one of the big pieces of news is that we now have, out in the wild, actually performing denial-of-service attacks, the first ever OS X botnet.
Hmm.
It's another first we don't like.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a year of them. I think we're just going to... I've been saying it's coming, and it's here.
So what's
if
the story?
You remember back to the start of the year, we had bootlegged software showing up on BitTorrent with the iServices Trojan.
And that was people downloading iWork, as I recall, illegal copies.
iWork, CS4, there was a bunch of counterfeit software,
mm-hmm,
which had the iServices Trojan injected into it. And the iServices Trojan could be, you know, was building a botnet. Well, they've turned the keys and ignited the botnet.
Hmm.
iServices is now out there on the web doing illicit things with Mac users' computers.
Bummer.
Yeah.
So is there a way to find out if you're one of the bots?
Antivirus software for the Mac will pick it up.
Oh, I don't want to run antivirus software. Well, I never download illegal software.
I was going to say, how much bootlegged software are you running?
Zero.
The answer is none.
Right.
Yeah, well then, so far, if that's the answer is still none to that, then you're probably fine. These things are still getting on through Trojans, not through exploits and viruses.
Right, and Trojan is where you download an application that you think is legitimate and it's actually something nefarious.
Yeah.
But they could infect, well, I don't know, I guess it would be pretty hard to infect a legitimate site, wouldn't it?
It would, and once that was discovered, that would be big news, and it would be all over the Macosphere.
So I guess if you like downloading nasty, creepy, cheating, stealing software, like Adobe CS4 and that sort of thing.
If you're going to hang around on the underbelly of the internet, then you're going to get infected.
Then go get yourself an antivirus. The rest of us can stay clean for now, but I'm sure that's only around the corner, right?
Yeah, we'll just keep monitoring the situation. But yeah, for now, we're good. But, you know, they have the attack. The bad guys have switched their attention to the Mac. It's no longer hypothetical.
All righty. All right, and then we have a Twitter worm.
Yeah,
actually, with four of them. And I think a lot of people probably know about this, but give the top level first of what happened.
Right. There's a bunch of basically really common types of flaws you can have in websites, and that anyone who isn't a Muppet should be on the lookout for. And Twitter wasn't, clearly. So, I mean, you know, in the olden days, it was always SQL injection was the big thing. Well, now it's cross-site scripting, which is called XSS, because CSS was taken, and X looks like a cross.
Okay.
They had an XSS flaw, which basically means that people can inject JavaScript into posts and things, or into profiles. Basically, XSS is where people get to inject JavaScript in. And then the JavaScript runs, and then the JavaScript can do things like send tweets that are from you, even though you didn't send them, because all you did was view a tweet.
Oh. Now, you didn't have to click on the link in the tweet? I thought you had to click on the link in the tweet to become infected.
It all depends on where... It all depends on exactly how they're exploiting the cross-site scripting flaw, but the basic idea is that this is a flaw in the web front end to Twitter that should not have been there, but it was there, and it possibly still is there.
So was it only would it not affect you if you were on Twirl or Nambu or one of the other TweetDeck or something?
Correct.
Oh, interesting.
Yes, so it was in Twitter's own web front end. So if you're reading up on the advice for how to protect yourself, the number one piece of advice was don't use the web interface. The second piece of advice was use NoScript to block Twitter.com and then browse away.
So you could have NoScript blocking Twitter.com and still browse to Twitter.com?
Yeah, that's what they were saying. Now, I'd be inclined, since we know the flow is on Twitter.com, I'd be inclined to say stick with your client.
Yeah. Well, there are times you want to go look at somebody's profile page, that sort of thing. You need to go to the Twitter client, though. I mean, to the Twitter website.
That's probably the most dangerous thing to do, actually, is to go visit someone's profile.
But sometimes I do that to go see, hey,
of course you do that.
Who is this guy?
I do it all the time because there's a lot of spam on Twitter, and I like to run a clean shop. I do not want people on my page listed as followers of me who are spam bots. So I do check every follower.
Right. Do you block followers if they're spam bots? I got to get around to doing that. I just realized I should be doing that, and I haven't, but I've just been going, well, as long as I don't follow them, I'm good. But yeah,
no, I don't want them showing up on my page. I don't want them feeding off my Google juice.
Ah, but it'll make my numbers go up.
Nah, quality, not quantity.
All right. So they haven't done any patches to fix this?
They say they've done a patch to block this particular variant, but that sounds to me like they may have cured the symptom and not the disease. I'm not sure. The details are not particularly available that I've been able to find anyway. Now, I've been a bit out of touch this week, so maybe there's more stuff I just haven't seen yet. But for now, the advice definitely seems to be stick to your client. And if you do have to go on the web, turn off JavaScript using NoScript.
Okie dokie. Let's see, we had a lot of fun out of Microsoft this week. As we had reported, you know, we have those time change problems between the way we split our episodes up. At some time in the last couple of weeks, we talked about the zero-day exploit in PowerPoint for both the Mac and Windows for the older versions of the two. It was 2004 on the Mac and 2003 on Windows. It looks like Microsoft came out with some patches. Did they fix that?
Okay, well, we'll jump back a little. We'll get into that kind of low detail in a sec. So last Tuesday was Patch Tuesday, and I don't know what the collective noun is for a lot of patches, but whatever that collective noun is, they released one of those of patches. 21 fixes in all, 11 of which were rated critical between Windows and Office.
Okay, that's the Windows update, Big Patch Tuesday. That's not for us. Right.
Well, no, it's not for us Mac users, no, because we're not Windows users. But this only has a slight Macintosh bias, remember?
Oh, okay, sorry.
We're not a Mac show, remember?
I forgot.
So if you're a Windows user, or if you have Windows VMs sitting on your Mac, which lots of people do, boot them up and apply these 21 fixes, because they're big. One that caught my eye was a critical one in DirectX that would allow arbitrary code execution through video playback.
Oh, nice.
Particularly the nastier ones. Anything that involves what we think of as data files, they're the most dangerous kind of vulnerabilities because we tend to not think twice about playing a video. You know, we think twice about running an executable. But playing a video?
Yeah. Now, is that related to they trick you into downloading a codec that causes that? Or you?
No, just a video.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, oh, well, we've had these in QuickTime, a million and one times.
Okay.
But this is one in DirectX. They're a particularly dangerous type of flaw. So it's important that you patch. But then as well as all of this Windows patching, there were also a bunch of Office updates. Two things we've been sort of keeping our eye on is a zero day in Excel from about a month ago.
I don't remember that one. Did I sleep through that episode? No, I remember the PowerPoint one, but I didn't remember a zero day in Excel.
No, we did talk about it, and you were all worried about it being your favorite program and stuff.
My favorite Microsoft.
And you said, keep an eye on it.
Yeah, okay.
So I've been keeping an eye on it.
Good.
So we had the PowerPoint one from 2 weeks ago, and the Excel one, it may be 5 or 6 weeks ago. It's some time ago. The Excel one is patched. The PowerPoint one, unless Microsoft have failed to update their own site with their own patches, the PowerPoint one is not patched.
Oh, no. So there isn't the office update. Actually, I'm pretty sure you're right. One of the guys in the LA Pug, which is a mail group I am a member of, did a great thing. He wrote down all of the different versions of each of the applications within Microsoft Office before he ran the update, and then he gave them to us after he ran the update, and the PowerPoint one had not changed revision when he ran that 11.5.4 update for Office 2004.
Well, I have in the show notes the link to the two security advisories, and the Excel one, you'll see, has gone to version 3, and it lists the fix. And the PowerPoint one is still at version 1. There's no updates to that bulletin, and doesn't list a fix.
I'm trying to remember. You know, I hardly ever launch anything but Excel. I haven't actually used Word since I got my new machine. That's been, what, 4 or 5 months. Is there a look for software update inside Office?
Like sort of magically happens on my Mac.
I have launched Excel, like, yesterday, and I didn't see it, so I'll have to...
I have it happen when I don't... It doesn't happen when I launch the app. It just happens every now and then. I think it runs weekly or something.
Well, I haven't seen it yet, so I guess I better... I'll see if I can force it.
Yeah. I don't actually run any of the Microsoft products at home, so I haven't worried about it. Then I'll worry about it in work next week, but I'm still on holidays, so I don't care.
That's right. You took, what, like 8 weeks off or something?
No, two. Which I like spent being sick, which is most annoying, actually.
All right. All right, is that it for Security Lite? So the bottom line is, if you've got a Windows VM or a regular Windows machine, run your big patches. And do the security update for Microsoft Office so that you get the patch at least to Excel. And stay tuned for PowerPoint. In fact, do not use PowerPoint. Just don't use it. Just, in fact, erase it from your machine. That is the safest.
Nothing to do with the security flaw. Just delete it.
I'm going to make a sign for my door at work that says "Death to PowerPoint. Use a wiki."
That'd be kind of cool. If you make a nice logo for it, you might be able to sell them as stickers.
Oh, I'm thinking. And then I'd get sued. It'd be great. All right.
Sounds like fun.
We're now going to interrupt the chit-chat across the pond for yet another segment from the listeners.
Is this mic on? Yeah, okay, great. Hey, my name is Listener Dean, and I am powerless over Allison's suggestions. So thank you for inviting me to come to the meeting today of the Nocillacast Anonymous and address all you and tell you my story. If you want to know how I met Allison, you're going to have to go back to episode 138. I'm the dean of Dean and Suzanne, who stalked Allison and Steve on their 20th wedding anniversary in Sedona, Arizona. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Little did I know that thousands and thousands of dollars later, I'd be addressing this group. Anyway, we did crash the romantic 20th anniversary dinner. We did do it unknowingly, and she tells a story quite well in episode 138. A little after that, we found out that Allison and Steve live near my sister. We're from Chicago, so we visited them out there. And lo and behold, we walked into their house, nearly dropped dead because we had the exact same furniture. Somewhere Allison has pictures of this too, I'm sure. Anyway, Allison started feeding us some of the Mac Kool-Aid way back when, and I was a Windows guy at the time. And right around the time of her first podcast, back when... it was just recorded voice, you know, in the prehistoric times and there was no music. Someone gave me an iPod as a gift. So I called Allison and I said, I got this crazy device. I don't know what to do with it. And she said, well, it'd be really cool if you had a Mac to sync it up with. We all know how persuasive Allison can be. So it wasn't long after that I found myself uncrating my brand new G5, one of the early versions before the camera was integrated into the screen. Well, now since I had an iPod and I had a Mac, it was time to get my wife an iPod. So I did. Then I got an iPod for each of my daughters. Then an iPod for my son. Then, of course, we needed shuffles, so I've got two of those, one for myself, one for my wife. And that wasn't good enough, so eventually I bought a MacBook for my wife. Then, now that we had the two Macs in the house, it was time to get an Airport Extreme. Mind you, I had a perfectly good Linksys router, but it wasn't white. Then my oldest daughter graduated from high school, and it was time to get her a machine, and wouldn't you know it, I got her a MacBook Pro. The next year, my other daughter graduated from high school, and I got her a MacBook. Now that we had those, it was time to come up with a present for my father-in-law one year. So I went out and bought him a MacBook as well. And oh yeah, an Airport Extreme for him too, which came in handy because he was able to watch his retirement evaporate on his back porch this last year. Then I bought an iTouch for me. That was pretty cool. Then, after listening to all the hoopla on the Nosillacast, I ended up getting my wife, Suzanne, an iPhone. And then I convinced two coworkers to dump Microsoft, and they switched over to Macs. As I think about it, I think that's how Jim Jones did it. Then I ended up buying an iPhone for myself. And right now, I'm recording this on a Zoom H2 microphone. Again, it was one of Allison's suggestions. Actually, this is the first time I've really used it. When we went back 5 years later to crash their 25th anniversary, both Allison and Steve convinced us to be on Facebook and got us on Facebook while we were still in Sedona. I use Aperture on the computer. Why? Because Allison says it's a good product. She's even convinced me to start dabbling in Twitter. She almost convinced me to buy ScreenSteps, even though I was selling a competing product at the time. And I'm still considering buying DVDpedia, and I don't even care about my DVDs. Something just occurred to me. Maybe Allison really is ticked that we crashed their wedding anniversary dinner 6 years ago, and this has all just been an elaborate payback. Anyway, Allison, either way, congratulations on episode 200. I wouldn't go a week without listening to you, and I hope there's 2,000 more left. Thanks.
Oh, Dean, what a great story. What I really should have done was suggested that you get involved in a Ponzi scheme I would be creating or something like that. That would be good. But 2,000 more episodes, we'll see. Wouldn't that be fun to think about what are we going to be doing in 2,000 episodes? Well, I should return you back to your regularly scheduled chit-chat across the pond. We had one other topic to talk about today. I think that we have probably gotten the most email from our topic of whether, where I said Macs are more expensive than Windows. We have gotten so many great emails from people on this subject. It's been pretty fun. The one I wanted to read in particular was from Pierre Bourgeois. He wrote in, "Enjoyed your recent discussion regarding Apple with Bart. One aspect that neither of you mentioned is that you can amortize the purchase of a Mac over a much longer period than a Windows-based PC. I purchased a Mac Pro about 3 years ago. I'm adding RAM and hard drives to it and fully expect to keep it 5 to 7 years. My first Mac, purchased in the mid-1980s, lasted 9 years and was still working when I went to the dark side in Windows in 1995. After that, I was using Windows machines, and after 30 to 35 months, any PC I had was suitable as a doorstop. How often do we hear about people repurposing their old Macs as media servers, etc.? This does not really happen in the Windows world unless you can repurpose your PC into an aquarium."
I feel that with Macs too.
Right. There is a whole line of that. But the thing I don't do quite what he does. I don't keep my Macs past about 3 years, except, well, Steve's G5 that we are retiring today with his new 24-inch iMac that he got for his birthday. That G5 is 6 years old now. And that didn't even occur to me. I mean, that had been a very powerful machine. And I mean, you're still using your G5 at work. I think yours is a little
younger. Still using my G5 at work. I'm still using my G4 at home, my little Mac Mini.
Yeah, yeah. And so I don't necessarily always keep them that long. I make Steve keep them that long. But what I what I did realize is I always sell them for a lot of money. I mean, this G5, I've been looking at comparable sales on eBay, and this G5 is worth about $600 on eBay. Now,
nice.
Think about it. A new PC costs $600. What is that worth 6 years later? You know, I sold a four-year-old PC that I had built with top-of-the-line processors and a really hot graphics card. Not top-of-the-line, but it was like one down from top-of-the-line, had a bunch of RAM, it had SATA drives, the whole thing. It was 3 or 4 years old, and I sold it for $100. So if you look at what that value is at the end, that's something I didn't take into account at all, the trade-in value or the how much longer you can amortize it over.
Yes, both good points. Another good point that I forgot to make, and I usually always make, is that what matters is the experience you have with the computer, not necessarily the raw numbers. So I can take a MacBook Pro with 2 gigs of RAM and put OS 10 on it, and it will be a really snappy, really quick machine. It will be really nice and responsive. If I take a Windows Vista machine and put 2 gigs of RAM in it, it is not a snappy, responsive machine. It's barely capable of running. If I put 4 gigs into that Vista machine, then I get a snappy machine. But I've had to put in twice as much RAM to get the same experience. So you can't just do the numbers to numbers.
Well, I think one other thing, though, that people should take into account, though, is that with Windows does seem to have a little bit more of the bit rot syndrome, where the longer you've been running it, the goobery it gets. So you should probably look at, if you were to reinstall Windows, run all the updates, and start adding applications as you use them, I think you'd end up with a snappy machine again. And the Mac doesn't
Windows
suffer from that as
every
much.
6 months, I nuked it. Always.
Okay.
It was a part of my standard, I run Windows, therefore I must format my machine every 6 months.
Wow. But it does speed up, right?
Of course, because it's all down to the registry. Mm-hmm. Well, not all, but very largely. I mean, I don't know if people understand what the registry is and why it's different to everything on the Mac, but programs need little bits of information. Your settings, they have to be saved somewhere. So on the Mac, every program saves its own settings in a file on the hard disk. Usually they're .plist files, but they don't have to be. And they're often saved in your library folder, but they don't have to be. But they're saved in some sort of file on your disk. On Windows, it all goes into the registry. Every single program you've ever installed all writes all of its settings into the registry.
So if you were to, say, be like me and download 7 or 8 applications a week, every one of those, even if I stopped using them or deleted them, that's still in the registry?
Depending on how nice the uninstaller is, yes. But let's assume that you do on Windows what you do on the Mac and have 50 million apps installed, which you do.
Right.
You boot up your Windows machine and you haven't launched a single app. The entire registry is in memory, however. Compare that to the Mac. If you don't launch any apps, none of their settings are in memory, because they're all on separate files. The moment you open Preview, it loads its plist file into memory. But it's only its plist file, and then you might open Office, and then its plist files will go into memory. But as soon as you close them, they're gone again.
Oh, okay.
Whereas on Windows, all settings for all apps are always in memory, because they're all in that stupid monolithic registry. It's a retarded idea. It's not there for... No, I know exactly why it was put there. It's there to make software piracy harder. In the old days of Windows 3.1.1, or 3.1, when you wanted to copy a program, you took its .ini file, and you took its .exe file, and that was pretty much the whole program. And you put that over on your friend's Windows machine, and it just worked. So to get around that, Microsoft introduced a registry, which meant that you had to have an installer, and you couldn't simply copy the files on the disk. It wasn't enough, because you didn't get the registry keys.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't taken that... I think I've been taking that for granted on the Mac until... I remember one fiasco day, I'm sure I told the story, but where I needed to try to get a new version of iMovie from one Mac to another, and a friend of mine just said, well, why don't you just drag it? And I was like, what do you mean drag it? And he goes, well, just drag it. And I dragged it, and it was like, oh, it's working.
Yeah. There's self-contained applications. Yeah. I mean, a .app file is actually a folder which contains everything the program needs. And then your settings are sitting in your library as a .plist or perhaps a collection of .plists.
Okay.
And that's it. And the settings you don't need. It's just that if you don't bring them over, you get back to a default setup rather than your customized setup.
Well, that's interesting. So, but part of my point was you can make it fast again by reinstalling, but reinstalling Windows is a pretty horrendous process.
It's a pretty horrendous process, and B, it's still its baseline, even when it's brand spanking new, its baseline still needs more RAM. You still need twice as much RAM to make Vista go as you do to make OS X go.
Yeah, see,
you get the same experience.
At $33 a gigabyte, that's not a big deal.
Yeah, okay, but I'm just saying, it's just more reason why you cannot do a simple numbers comparison. It doesn't give you a realistic expectation.
Okay.
Numbers to numbers, my MacBook Pro and my brother's 17-inch Dell look the same. In fact, his probably looks better. My MacBook Pro runs circles around his Dell in terms of experience. Circles.
Interesting. Well, I do want to give a couple other viewpoints I got. K Katie Echoey MacBook says on the blog, a couple of great comments here. She says, you people in the USA think you pay an Apple tax. Sheesh, try being in the UK. And I have to use Windows at work, and I will do anything to do things on my MacBook because it's gorgeous. Anyway, she goes on to talk a little bit about Aperture and RAW, and she's going to have some fun with that. I really liked what Chris wrote on the blog. He said, I can't speak for Toshiba computers, but my girlfriend has had two disastrous experiences with HP laptops. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically over the course of 2 years, they just had disasters. Well, it was kind of along the lines with what you were saying, where you were saying they fall apart after a couple of years, and they had overheating problems. It's a great story, and you should go read it. But this week alone, I've had two people tweet me about the cases on their MacBooks cracking. Two different people, completely independently.
Yes, but how do Apple respond to that?
Well, the second one is out of warranty, and I told her call them anyway because I bet they'll take care of her.
But they've said there was a warranty extension on that this week, haven't they?
Oh, they did? No, I didn't know that. Okay.
I'm still not completely caught up with my news, but one of the things I heard was that Apple are fixing cracked cases when the laptop does not otherwise show signs of being abused.
Okay.
So if the laptop looks like it was thrown down the stairs, then they're not going to fix it. But if the laptop looks like it was well looked after, they will.
But, you know, I do have that example I like to tell of the time my brother knocked his PowerBook off of a table onto tile. I mean, absolutely looked like it had been thrown down the stairs. No question, it was clear this had been dropped. And he had me send it into Apple with nothing in it. No explanation of what happened. Just send it in for repairs. It was 2 years out of warranty, and they just fixed it and sent it back to him and didn't even ask him about it. They didn't charge him. They didn't do anything. They just mailed it back with a new case. So
nice.
I think he got really, really lucky, but he was a lucky guy.
You hear a lot of stories about AppleCare doing that kind of thing. I mean, wasn't there yourself and the wine last year? Or you told them you'd spilled wine into your laptop and they just repaired it anyway?
I didn't know. It wasn't that. It was the magnet story. That was the one where I told them I did it and they replaced it.
Oh, yeah, that was very funny.
But, you know, the story that Chris talks about was it was an overheating problem where these Toshiba laptop or these HP laptops would shut down. But we had the same problem on the, I think it was the early MacBooks, right? They had a problem where they were overheating and they would shut down.
Well, no, we had it on the MacBook Pros and firmware fixed it.
Yeah. Okay. No, but there was one, I forget, it was like a solder joint would actually make contact with something.
Yes. Was that the G3?
It was iBooks. Might have been iBooks.
Where
yeah.
people would end up sticking in little bits of paper in them to force them together.
Yeah. So, I mean, Apple dealt with it, but, you know, in this case, HP dealt with it. It's just they had the same problem with the same laptop twice, a new one and it happened again. But
We know Apple have design issues with first-generation products. It's something we do know.
I believe I had my logic board replaced twice in the first 6 months on the very first MacBook Pro. But I know I walk into that because I do the bleeding edge path, right? I'm the one that stands in line outside the door before the first model comes off the assembly line. But I just don't want to give the impression that we think that Apple never has flaws, you know, like HP did in this case.
Yeah, there are occasionally design issues, and Apple generally deal with them quite well. But on the whole, a three-year-old Mac will look a hell of a lot healthier than a three-year-old PC. Especially laptops.
I'm not sure I agree with it, but I'm willing to accept it.
Okay, well, the example I have is my dad has been an executive for, like, as long as I remember my dad, and he's had laptops from, you know, when they were quite rare and quite large. And 2 years is always the maximum lifetime that he can carry them around on his day-to-day travels, because after that, they're always in bits, and he's had them from every make you can care to imagine.
Hmm.
And my MacBook Pro is with me everywhere I go. It's in and out of my bag all the time, and it looks new. There are people who look at it and go, oh, that's a lovely new computer. I go, no, it's 3 years old. They go, what?
Yeah.
They don't believe me.
I've definitely had that happen. My MacBook Pro looks practically brand new. There's, you know, one little dot of scratch here and, you know, a couple things. But, they definitely do hold up. I'll have to give you that one. I was looking
Screens are the big thing for me, right? The screen on my MacBook Pro is still solid. There's still no wobble in it, no give in it. It's still perfectly solidly attached to the laptop.
That's true. That's
when
true.
I tilt the laptop, it doesn't click forward and backward. That has happened to me on every non-Mac laptop I've ever owned.
I'll have to. Yeah, I've only remember my experience base is pretty small. I've used one Windows laptop, and it was crap the day I got it. But that's my fault. But I can't imagine. I mean, this was not a cheap laptop. It was just a crappy design. But I wonder if you did buy that $400 laptop, what that would be like a few years out, or $300 laptop.
Well, design is the big thing. Because when I picked up the MacBook Pro, I was instantly hit by the design. The fact that the entire back of the laptop is the hinge, rather than there being two flimsy little hinges on each side, right. That's really good design. The fact that all the vents are on the top, so the air is sucked, I can't remember whether it's sucked in along your screen and then out through the speakers, or whether it's sucked in through your speakers and then out along the screen, but at no point is it at the sides or at the base. So it's actually impossible to block the vents.
Oh, that's a good point.
Then the MagSafe, I mean, talk about design.
Okay.
The fact that all the ports are down the side rather than stuck in the back.
Actually, I wish I could remember who wrote into me about that. I was a woman. I can't remember who. She wrote in about it, and I said, now that I think about it, that MagSafe connector is worth about $700, because if you – or actually, you could even call it $1,000 if it's a MacBook. You know, if you throw your MacBook mm-hmm. on the floor once – That MagSafe connector would have saved you $1,000 because it's not going to go flying off.
Well, I think my MacBook Pro was a week old when the MagSafe got tested.
Okay, my personal favorite story, and I know I've told this one before, but I just loved it. I was
the
at
dog.
I was at my friend Melanie's house, and she has a 700-pound Great Dane that stands about 6'8". This thing is insane.
Bigger than me.
Yeah, I'm exaggerating a tiny bit, but I mean, she weighs Emma weighs 140 pounds. That's a huge dog. She comes yeah. above my waist. Anyway, I purposely plugged my MacBook Pro in from the desk horizontally midair across the doorway to a plug, and I said, "No problem. If anything happens, my MagSafe connector is going to save me." So Emma came running through the door, and just like I expected her to, and popped that little connector right off, and everything was safe. So I picked up the cable, and I was holding on tightly to the cable at the MagSafe end with the other end plugged into the wall, and I was telling my friend Melanie how great this thing was when I forgot about her 80-pound Labradoodle who ran through, but now I'm holding on to it. Yeah, she's falling. Rips the connector out of the wall, the plugs bent the pins.
Yeah, because the MagSafe isn't on your hand.
Yeah. But my laptop did not go flying in either case, so.
Yeah, exactly. No, they do work. And, I mean, there's lots of those little design touches. The backlit keyboard is something that I drooled over for so long when I first got my MacBook Pro.
Oh, I got to tell you, so I told you I got the new HP 8530W high-end workstation laptop. This week, somebody pointed out, they said there was something up at the top, just this funny little button and a little cover. And they said, "What's that?" And I'm thinking, oh, wow, that's got to be the webcam because it's right where the eyesight is. And I push the button, a little thing flips out, and it's a light that points at your keyboard.
Not exactly the right solution to that problem.
No, it was. I felt kind of sad.
I don't want my hands lit. I want my keys lit.
It was just such a pathetic little attempt. I felt sorry for him.
Oh, dear. What's the other one? Oh, yeah, the other one I always thought was great. And I'm actually noticing PC companies are emulating this now at last. Slot loading drive instead of that stupid tray that always breaks and is so flimsy and ickle.
You know, though, I got to say, the one thing I do like about the Windows machines is that you can simply yank that CD out without having to wait for some software to decide that it's okay to spit it out. I kind of like that you can just pop those little trays out.
The button is often disabled, actually, especially if you run Linux on your PC. It behaves just like a Mac.
I don't like that way. I like that.
No,
you just
I do
pull
because
it
means you can't corrupt your data easily and stuff. It's good reasons not to be spitting out the CD when it's not ready.
Oh, I suppose.
But no, the slot loading is a big start. However, the slot loading does have the drawback that you should never, ever, 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 ever insert anything other than a full size disk into a slot loading tray.
When you also do run the danger of if you've got a sticker on it, like all of my home movies that I'm trying to back up have stickers on them.
What, the stickers come out and wedge the whole thing together?
They could peel up a little bit, and then that could really cause a disaster. I've never had it happen, but I've heard about it happening to people.
Okay, that's one I wasn't aware of. But no, I have very vivid memories of taking a G5 iMac and holding it sideways and shaking until the damn little CD fell out.
Is it you thought that would work the first time?
Yeah, because the CD said PC and Mac.
So you didn't think about that it would just, like, not get on the spindle properly and stuff? It's like,
well, I figured it says Mac. This is a Mac. So I stuck it in the side, and it didn't feel right because it just sort of fell instead of being sucked in. It just went dunk. And then it wouldn't come out. So we actually had to take the iMac. It was the better half's iMac, and we shook it for a while, and then the CD came out.
I love the image of the two of you holding an iMac up, shaking it, trying to get the CD out.
Both of us blaming the other. I was like, well, why did you stick that in? Well, you told me to. I was like, no, you did. In hindsight, it was very funny, but it was a panic moment.
Oh, that is funny. I like it. Oh, one last email. Bob DeGrand wrote a really long email to me. I'd like everybody to see it. Maybe Bob would post that same message on the blog because it's pretty interesting. But he walks through a lot of the same things that you said. He talks specifically about how much more RAM Windows needs. So it's a pretty good read. Bob, go ahead and post that on the blog. I think that would be cool. Everybody can enjoy it. But I did also get an email, and I was trying to find it. I can't remember who it was. They wrote a bunch of wonderful things, and the end of it said, please stop being mean to Windows. Hey, last week's show, I talked about what I liked about Windows. All three things, remember?
I think there may be some things I like in Windows 7, but I haven't yet found those little rays of light that make Windows tolerable. For me, there is just nothing I like about the Windows experience. At all. I have yet to find anything.
I did get a couple of good tips from people on other alternatives. You told me about Smalltron, and I've been using that this week. That's definitely working well for me. I like that as a replacement for Notepad++. And I did get a hint about a couple of programs that would allow you to grab the windows from any side. So I haven't tested those yet. In fact, I could go back and find those, but that would be really fun if that works like advertised.
Yeah, that's something Leopard could learn. Actually, no, there is one thing that annoys me about OS X that Windows doesn't do, is in Explorer, when you have it in list mode, like I always have my Finder, when you select the file and you hit Shift and then you hit down, down, up, in Windows you end up with two files. On the Mac you end up with four.
Oh, yeah, because it keeps selecting as you move around.
Yeah, so you can't undo a mistake. With doing the opposite doesn't undo your mistake, it makes an extra mistake, and then you have two.
All right, good. There's one thing Bart likes better about Windows.
Yeah, that took some finding, actually.
All right, well, we have rambled on for on and on and on, and this being the 200th episode, it's going to be about 6 hours long, I think, so we better cut this off.
200 minutes, no?
Actually, maybe that would be what we should shoot for. All right, Bart, everything on stage for next week looking okay?
All looking good. I don't know whether it'll be Saturday or Sunday, because we're organizing a photo walk in Maynooth for some of us typical shutterbugs in the area, i.e. me and
fun.
The MacTrack lads. We'll definitely have time to do a chit-chat across the pond.
Sounds good.
Okay, until then, happy computing.
It's David Allen, Wizard Gold of Mac 20 Questions. Congratulations, Alison, 200 today, and you don't look a day over 70. It didn't take long after finding the NoCellarCast for me to have it as a staple part of my podcast diet. I look forward to every Monday hearing the chit-chat across the pond with the odd couple having a friendly bicker banter session while being informative as well as entertaining. And what I like about your podcast is that there's something for everybody, from the dumb questions to the security light. Excellent. I always find it impressive the way Alison uses her voice expressively, making the podcast easy to listen to and enjoy. I was delighted to interview Alison for the Mac 20 Questions podcast to find out more about how she ticks with the Mac. A true Mac podcasting enthusiast that also talks. Well done, Alison, on the 200th episode, and may there be many more to come.
Hey, Alison, Mac Sparky here. I wanted to congratulate you on 200 great shows. You truly are a geek, and that's not just because you're a fantastic podcaster. You also keep the internet in your purse.
Hi, Alison. This is Don McAllister from Screencasts Online. I just wanted to say congratulations on reaching your 200th NoCellarCast. And, you know, I'm not sure if people fully appreciate the amount of time you take in putting these shows together, with all the research and preparation involved, and yet you still manage to put it all across with such enthusiasm and good humour. It's always great to hear about tech, but I get just as much out of the show hearing about Steve and the rest of the family, along with your car waxing exploits. It's just a pity you don't live a bit closer so you could have a chance to work your magic on my car. Anyway, so here's to the next 200 NoCellarCasts, Alison. Congratulations and pass on my regards to Steve, the family and all your loyal and regular listeners. And of course, not forgetting Honda Bob.
Hi, Allison. It's Tim from the Mac Review Cast. I wanted to say congratulations on episode number 200 of the NoscillaCast podcast located at podfeet.com. Over the past years, I've considered you a real dear friend, and all the work you've done for me at the Mac Review Cast, I just couldn't tell you how much it means to me. So I wanted to be with you on episode 200 to at least bring back a little something about what I remember the most of Allison Sheridan and the NoscillaCast podcast. I guess the thing I remember most is you're always Allison. You're not anything else or anyone else. You are who you are, and you let your listeners know that. There's no front. There's nothing fake or bogus about you. We know Allison Sheridan after 200 podcast episodes as well as anybody knows Allison Sheridan. And keep up the great work. Keep giving yourself to your listeners like you have been. You'll have 200 more great episodes. We love you here at the Mac Review Cast. Don't ever leave us. And if you ever need anything over at NoscillaCast, you know all you have to do is ask. Take care, and congratulations again, Allison.
Hey, Allison. Lola here. Congratulations on 200 episodes. I am so proud of you. And that sounds really weird coming from me, but 200 episodes of the NoscillaCast is an amazing achievement. You've got a great group of listeners. The NoscillaCast listeners are amazing, and the contributors as well. I love listening to Chit Chat Across the Pond with you and Bart. And to be quite honest, I really just dig you. You are an amazing person, Allison. So keep going strong. Make sure to take care and stay gold.
Hey, Allison, it's Victor, and I want to congratulate you on show 200. What a great achievement. You bring so much happiness and joy and fun and technology to so many people who enjoy your style and your way of teaching people how to use their Macs and how to use technology in so many different ways. Congratulations, and keep them coming.
Hi, Allison. This is Katie from the MacCore Podcast. I just wanted to send in a quick audio note to congratulate you on your 200th show. It's quite an achievement. I also wanted to say what a pleasure and a privilege it's been to get to know you, not only through your podcast, but also personally over the past few years. Don't you find it amazing how podcasting can bring people together, not only online, but also sometimes in real life as well? I know I found that with my show, and it's just astonishing. I was thinking about sharing some kind of comical antidote about our time that we spent together at Macworld last year, but upon further consideration, I figured what happens at Macworld probably should stay at Macworld. Though I will say that our first night that involved lots of wine, a paper cup, Phil Schiller's keynote, and a malfunctioning shower door has to have been the most fun I've had in a long time. Congratulations on your 200th show, and here's to many, many more.
Okay, how do you do a show like that and listen to that and not just feel humbled by the people that have said such wonderful things? I mean, the greats are on this show, and I always say that just getting one little note telling me, hey, good job, keep it up, keeps me going for a week or two. This is easily worth another 200 shows, everyone. This is absolutely overwhelming. I thank Steve for taking the time to put this together and sort them all out into the different pieces all the time all of you put together. It's just, this is amazing. And the chat room is just going crazy right now. Really, really having fun with this. I'm beside myself. I had written things I was going to say. I wrote it out ahead of time, assuming I would be all floored and everything, but I can't get past that. But okay. This week was all about me. This was all thanks for me. So guess what? We've got the 4-year anniversary show coming up. And instead of being all about me, this time it's going to be all about you, because we are going to do a software giveaway. Now, I assume you all listen to the Mac Review Cast with Tim, and he is doing a giveaway. And when I heard that, I was like, oh man, we're doing the exact same thing. But guess what? There's hardly any overlap. We both chose our favorite software developers, and there's a couple of the big ones that are pretty much the same. But I think we'll see some surprises between the two. It should be fun. So we've been going on for an hour and 37 minutes here so far, so I better not take too long. But let me give you an idea of some of the people who've already written back and told me that they'd love to contribute to the show. And it was crazy. You know, I wrote to these developers and they all wrote back with just like, oh man, I can't believe you're going to let me be part of the show. This is fantastic. The Mac development community is just amazing. So the first one to actually suggest the idea was Gene from smileonmymac.com suggested a Mac switcher bundle. So that's going to be in there. Don, out of the blue, I didn't even ask Don. Don McAllister from Screencast Online has offered a 6-month subscription to Screencast Online. We have App Delete from the wonderful developer Reggie Ashworth. We have Drive-In Video Queue and Flip for Mac WMV from flipformac.com. DVDpedia and Bookpedia from Brugy.com. Feeder and Keep It Together from reinventedsoftware.com. QuickScale from CodingMammoth.com, Screenium and Mac Family Tree from Cinium.de, SuperDuper from Shirt-Pocket.com, Wiretap Studio and Soundboard from Ambrosia Software, and somebody predicted it in the chat room, I believe it was Connor, ScreenSteps from ScreenSteps.com. And of course, it will be the pro version. That's just the vendors I've heard back from so far. So, pay close attention. Write this down. To take part in the giveaway, send me an email with the title Anniversary. I'm going to create a smart mailbox for that title, so don't rename your email. Don't get tricky with the spelling. Don't spell it wrong. Spell it Anniversary. Make that the title, and I'll pull those all into a smart mailbox. This email title will get you in the giveaway, and then in the body, put your name and any message you like in the body there. I'm going to put each email and name into Excel. I'm going to number them in the order I receive them. Then I'm going to run a random number generator because I'm just that geeky. And I'm going to do that next to the prizes, and I'm going to let Excel pick the winners. The deadline is Sunday, May 9th. So get your entry in quickly. We have a lot of gifts to give away, so I want everybody to send in their emails and get involved in this. And you can, of course, okay, good job, Evan. No, you can only submit one entry. If you submit two, I will delete both of them. Only one entry. Well, that winds up this marathon session. So I am so glad you're all able to join us. Let's get together and join us for the next 200, shall we? In the meantime, keep up all the great emails, including dumb questions, by sending them to allison@podfeet.com. And be sure to follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeet. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.